common sense commentary on politics, culture, and current events. If it's on your mind, it's In the News. And now, In the News, with your host, Mike Dakak.
There were reports of unidentified federal agents in Portland last week, Portland, Oregon, driving around in unmarked vehicles, minivans, as a matter of fact, and picking up protesters, throwing them in the back of these minivans and driving off with them and taking them away. Some were arrested, some weren't. They were taken reportedly to federal buildings and they were questioned extensively there. And some were subsequently arrested and some were let go. You may not know this, but there have been serious and violent protests happening in Portland for the better part of 2 months now. And there's been nary a peep about it in the mainstream media. Last week, they attacked a federal building. They've been attacking federal officers this entire time. They set fire to a police association office last week. Last night, I saw that they set fire to a federal courthouse. Again, these are anarchists. They're not protesters. They're not looking for a certain law to be passed or specific reforms in criminal justice or equality in pay. They're looking to burn the place down. And local officials in Portland got all bent out of shape about the presence of federal law enforcement. The mayor said, we don't want federal officials in our city. If they have to guard federal buildings, then let them stay in the buildings and guard them and not come out of the buildings. And there were the obligatory left-leaning users on Twitter who were chasing down some of these troops, some of these law enforcement officials as they were getting in and out of their minivans. And they were yelling and chanting at them, hey, identify yourselves. That was the big thing, that they're walking around without any identifying patches on their uniforms. So they liken them to a Trump Gestapo or a secret police force. And they were chasing them down with their cell phones and video recording them and saying, hey, identify yourselves. Who are you? Where are you taking this fine, upstanding young anarchist? What are you going to do with them? And I got to tell you, I was watching these pictures on my screen and I was fine with it. Not only was I fine with it, I have to admit the truth. I try not to lie to anybody. I was a little bit relieved. You know, the acting head of the Department of Homeland Security was in town that day, last week in Portland. And he said something along the lines of, you know, if local officials can't get control of their cities and towns and they're going to let violence continue unopposed, if they can't get a handle on these protesters, then we will. And I have to admit, I was relieved to hear someone talk like that. It made me feel like someone was still in charge. The hammer has to come down. And it surprised me because the tolerance, I'll speak for myself here, the tolerance for scenes like that here in this country, you're used to seeing it abroad, but the tolerance for things like that here in this country has gone way up. I suspect, even though I'm speaking for myself, I suspect I'm not alone in thinking that way. You know, the left likes to think that because Twitter is outraged about something, then America is outraged by it. They think Twitter is America. It's not. And I would hasten to say it's less so now than it has been in the past. You know, when Twitter first started, it seems kind of quaint now. But when Twitter first started, it was a place where you could go and, I mean, 90% of Twitter, it seemed like, was non-political in the early days. It's the exact opposite now. I would say only 10% of Twitter is non-political these days. But when Twitter first came about, it was a place where you could go and say, hey, this is what I'm up to and this is what I'm doing and look at this nice park that I'm walking through today. And when I first got on Twitter, I had just made the change into IT. I wouldn't make a change into journalism for a few years after that. But when I first got into IT, I got on Twitter in 2009. And I went on there and I said, hey, folks, I'm just made the change into IT and I'm learning CSS or HTML or PHP or whatever language I was learning at the time. And people were welcoming and they were great and they would send me resources and they would follow me and I would follow them back and we would comment and we would DM each other. And it was great. It's not that anymore. And I would hasten to say that most people, if and when they come across that story about the secret police in Portland, if you want to call it, it's not the secret police, but if you want to call it that, they would say, well, it's about damn time. it's about time we get tough with these thugs, because that's what they are. And this is not about race, and it's not about racial justice. This is about burning the country down. They're not going to stop. They have to be stopped. And it's not going to be pretty. It's going to get worse before it gets better, but it is going to get better. You know, Back the Blue protests have been happening all over the country. Did you know that? Again, nary a peep in the mainstream media. These are protests that have been happening in cities all over the country in support of police officers. You know, there's a vast defund the police movement because they want to do away with law and order. They want to subvert and they want to supplant the law and order that we have with their own version of law and order. Well, there are people out there who are starting to get vocal about their opposition to that kind of idea. And so there have been protests all over the country in support of local police forces. Not a peep in the mainstream media. Blue Lives Matter, which is one such organization in New York City, wants to paint a mural of Blue Lives Matter. Now, you know, the murals all over the place of Black Lives Matter. They want to paint a mural of Blue Lives Matter in New York City. No word yet on whether they got the approval to do that. Mayor de Blasio, mayor of New York City, has 27 cops guarding a mural. He along with his wife, helped protesters paint a giant Black Lives Matter mural on Fifth Avenue, right in front of Trump Tower. And he has 27 cops guarding the mural, one sergeant and 8 officers per shift, 3 shifts a day, guarding this mural. You know, de Blasio, longtime listeners of the show know that I don't take cheap shots. I don't like to call people names because I don't think it advances the conversation. It doesn't move the conversation forward. And if that is one thing this show is about, it's about moving the conversation forward. But Bill de Blasio is a moron. He doesn't belong within 100 miles of a position of authority. And New York City mayor is a pretty big position of authority. I mean, I would hasten to say that the mayor of New York City, on average, is probably more influential, more powerful than maybe 40, 45 governors in this country. Bill de Blasio doesn't belong within 100 miles of New York City's City Hall. Anyone that petty. And anyway, I mean, he canceled large-scale gatherings in New York City through at least September. And if you're not familiar, New York City during the summer is a very, very outdoor gathering kind of place. There are concerts all summer long. There are the Shakespeare in the Park programs. There's theater in the park programs. There's movie showings, outdoor movie showings. You can't walk a block or two without tripping over a street fair. There are outdoor food festivals. And so de Blasio does away with all of that because of COVID-19. Okay, you can argue that it's necessary. But in that, during that same interview, when he's making that announcement to the broader public, he's asked, well, what about Black Lives Matter protests? And he said, well, those have to continue. You have to understand that this is a special moment in time. Look, listen, folks, either this COVID-19 coronavirus thing that we're living with right now is serious and contagious enough to warrant canceling all public events, or it's not. Either we all have to cower and hide under our beds and not come out for 2 years until there's a vaccine, or it's not. You can't split the baby on this thing. Are they saying that if they let the protests happen, that they're responsible for killing Black Lives Matter, that they're willing to take that responsibility? Are they saying that if people die for Black Lives Matter, it'll be worth it? Who gets to decide what, in Bill de Blasio's language, is a special moment in time and what isn't? You know, a new poll came out this week that shows that a majority of Americans now oppose Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter movement. In early June, it was the opposite. In early June, 44% of Americans supported Black Lives Matter, 34% opposed it. Well, recent numbers show that now 41% of Americans support Black Lives Matter and 44% oppose it. But even African Americans now are starting to question the movement and the people that are taking it over. Maybe not taking it over. They've been in charge of it the entire time. They've just become much more visible now. And an African American officer in Portland gave a very eloquent and what I thought was thoughtful press conference a couple of weeks ago. His name was Jakari Jackson. And he says, you know, it should tell you, he said something to the effect of, it should tell you everything you need to know. When there are more minorities on the police side of the protest line than there are on the protest side of the line. He said, I've heard things at these protests directed at African American officers that I've never heard before. People were standing face to face, their faces inches away from African American officers, and saying, how could you live with yourself? How could you? And trying to goad them into bad behavior. They were insulting. They were saying things like, I've never seen a nose this big on another officer. They were trying to provoke them. And he said, I've never seen anything like that. You have to question, he said, Officer Jackson said, what's going on out here? He says African Americans that he knows no longer recognize the movement. He said, I actually had a cousin, he says, who went to one of the marches and he wound up leaving. He said, this has turned into something else. This is weird, he says. Weird is the word, except it's not weird. It's all been pre-planned. There was a couple from St. Louis, which you've probably seen stories about here and there over the last couple of weeks, the McCloskeys. Mark and Patricia McCloskey, they were eating dinner at their home a few weeks ago, when Black Lives Matter protesters break down a gate to their gated community. And now the protesters say they were cutting through the community to get to the mayor's house, the mayor of St. Louis, because they wanted to demand her resignation. And so they break down this gate to this gated community and they cut through the community. Well, the McCloskeys, they don't know, what they're doing or where they're going, what their ultimate plans are. So they come out of their home with guns and they're not so much pointing them at the protesters, although, well, I guess you could say pointing them. Okay, we want to be accurate here, but they're saying, look, you're on private property. Get out of here. The two arm themselves with a gun. They point them at the protest. They tell them to get away. The St. Louis Circuit Attorney, a woman by the name of Kim Gardner, files charges against the couple. Mark and Patricia were each charged with one count of unlawful use of a weapon, flourishing. The charge is a Class D felony. They face anywhere from 1 to 4 years in prison, fines of up to $5,000. They're not going to go to prison. The governor of Missouri made it clear in so many words. The other day, and actually the Attorney General moved to have the charges dismissed. But this St. Louis Circuit Attorney, Kim Gardner, said, we have to make sure that the right to peacefully protest is not infringed upon. When were they infringing the McCloskeys on the right to anyone's right to peacefully protest? They didn't go out into the middle of the street and wave their guns at the protesters. They were standing on their property. They were in their front yard, steps away from their front door. The protesters were on their property. You see, they want to make them an example. They want to tell you, hey, listen, we're in charge now. Your laws mean nothing. That was the old school, to quote somebody. This is the new school now. And if you resist, we're going to target you even more. We're going to target you even harder. What do you call that kind of behavior? When they try to get political gains through intimidation, it's terrorism. What's the definition of terrorism? The unlawful use of violence and intimidation, especially against civilians, in the pursuit of political aims. That's what this is. And what goes hand in hand with intimidation and violence? Censorship. You can't speak out against anything that's going on. Google's parent company, Alphabet, the parent company of Google, announced this week that it's going to bar websites from running Google ads. You can't use Google's software or their technology to create ads for your site if you include what it considers dangerous content about the coronavirus. Well, what do they consider dangerous content about the coronavirus? Well, Google gave several examples. One is the theory that the coronavirus originated in a Chinese lab, or that it was created, or that the founder of Microsoft, Bill Gates, has anything to do with it, or that the virus is a hoax. But all of these stories are more or less true. I don't believe the virus is a hoax, but the panic around it is certainly a hoax. Google will only allow certain institutions to run ads about COVID-19. So think only government agencies and international organizations like the WHO. We have several defectors now from China. It's been revealed. China and Hong Kong scientists they're in the hands of Western intelligence agencies. And they're reportedly giving us information that COVID-19 is, in fact, the result of laboratory experiments conducted in Wuhan and in China. Now, this is not Mike Dacak saying, hey, welcome to ITN. the coronavirus was created in a Wuhan lab. This is Mike Dacak saying we have defectors from China saying that the coronavirus was created in a Wuhan lab. But if you say that now, you're a conspiracy theorist. You get banned. If you talk about masks, the debate over masks rages on. You know, there's a health official in Broward County, Florida, Southern Florida, that issued an order this week that says people sitting at home have to wear masks, even if you're sitting home alone. If you're sitting home alone, where are you going to get the coronavirus from? In Mexico, 85% of the public wears masks. Mexico is very much like Asian countries when it comes to mask wearing and the ubiquity of mask wearers. 85%, it's estimated, of Mexicans wear masks in public. Their cases continue to skyrocket. There are numerous examples of people showing up to take tests. This is in this country. There's a woman in Florida who, during an interview, revealed that she went to, again with Florida, but she went to a coronavirus testing facility. She writes her name, writes her email address, gives all her address, her phone number, all of her personal information, enters the testing facility, and waits in line. But she's there for a really long time. Eventually, she gets tired of waiting. And I think she also saw a sign that says, if you're not showing symptoms, you shouldn't be here getting tested. This is after she checks in. So the facility has her name and all of her information, but she doesn't take the test. She sees the sign and she leaves, never takes the test. The next day, she gets a phone call from the facility and says, you've tested positive. And she says, tested positive for what? And they say, for COVID. And she says, how is that possible? I never took the test. What sample do you have that you've tested? I never gave a sample. I gave my name and my information. I left before taking the test. The local ABC station down there in Sarasota posts the story on Facebook, and they get tons of replies, tons of comments of people saying, I know someone who had the same exact thing happen to them. My daughter and her four friends went to get tested. The same exact thing happened to them. My wife, my uncle, my cousin, I have a coworker. There's a flaw in a COVID test manufactured by Thermo Fisher. You hear that name thrown around a lot by Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci. And so this test is manufactured by Thermo Fisher Scientific. It's used by labs across the United States. It's causing false positive test results. In other words, it tells you a patient is positive when they're not really COVID-19 positive. Department of Public Health scientists in Connecticut, they discovered the flaw in the test. So far up there in Connecticut, 90 people, mostly residents of Connecticut nursing homes and assisted living facilities, have received false positive results. And so you see a story like that and you say, okay, well, that's great. You know, what a relief. It's false positive. They were shown to have COVID-19, but they don't really have it. So all's well that ends well. Well, not so much. The false results have potentially dire consequences because Connecticut guidelines call for nursing home residents who test positive for COVID to be quarantined together. And so potentially you have people who tested positive but weren't really positive, and now they're quarantined with people who were in fact positive, may have contracted it from them. I mean, this is a real problem in all of these things. You don't really know what and then they say, well, how do you explain why the cases are going up? Every day you see a new graphic. Oh, our cases are skyrocketing. How do you explain why the cases are skyrocketing? I explain it this way. We're being lied to, not to put too fine a point on it. Colleges, an increasing number of colleges and universities are rolling out student guidelines that place requirements on students. Among them are mandatory flu shots and the except before coming back in the fall and accepting what they're calling social distancing contracts. The University of Tennessee in Knoxville announced that flu shots are going to be required for all students returning to in-person classes this fall. And they also made it clear that a COVID-19 vaccine is going to be a requirement once one is released that's proven to be safe and effective. Knoxville isn't alone, though. Harvard University expects students to participate in routine COVID-19 testing. So our kids are going to get stuck once a week or once a month now, if they want to go to class, if they want to go to school. Harvard is also encouraging, quote-unquote virtual socializing rather than in-person socializing as the first option of social contact. Cornell University, Princeton University, the University of Colorado, Boulder have all instituted similar guidelines. There's testing that's soon to begin in parts of Africa for a biometric ID system that's going to include vaccine records, but they're going to link your vaccine record now with your payment system, your ability to pay, your credit card, you know, if you want to pay for food or you want to pay for medicine, whatever you want, whatever the necessities of your life are, your vaccine record is going to be linked with those payment systems. The systems are being backed by the Gavi Vaccine Alliance, G-A-V-I. The Gavi Alliance, you can look it up, is largely backed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But if you mention that, you're going to be banned from Google, apparently. The Rockefeller Foundation also has a lot to do with that. MasterCard's Gavi partnership is linked closely to its World Beyond Cash effort, which is a business model that is pursuing largely a reduction in the use of physical use of cash. We've seen that over the last several weeks and months here. Retailers in the U.S. have been encouraging consumers to use digital forms of payment because of the quote-unquote coin shortage that we have, which no one can explain and no one can get to the bottom of. In early June, Gavi reported that MasterCard, the credit card payment system, they have a program called Wellness Pass. And that program is going to be adapted in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. About a month later, MasterCard announced that a company called TrustStamp, their biometric identity platform, is going to be incorporated into that Wellness Pass program. TrustStamp provides tracking by using biometric identity records in areas where there is limited internet or cellular connectivity. It also doesn't require traditional forms of ID tracking like legal names. The Wellness program involving Gavi and MasterCard and TrustStamp and all of these things, it's going to be launched in West Africa soon. Tested there, basically, and it's going to be coupled with a COVID vaccination program once a vaccine becomes available. Folks, all of these things that we're seeing now, this marriage between medicine and your payment system and you getting deplatformed and debanned if you say the wrong things, this is a slow motion rollout of the New World Order. Now, you can't say that, though, because then you're labeled as crazy. Don't accept anything at face value anymore. We don't know who we can trust and who we can't. I don't mean to sound, you know, dire and doom and gloom in here, but this is what's going on. You have to not trust anyone. Well, how do you function, you may ask? Pay close attention to the people they're trying to silence, the people they're trying to censor, the people they're trying to ban and deplatform, and the people they're trying to get you to distrust. As I read someone put it the other day, why would you waste ammunition on a target that doesn't pose a threat to you? Well, to ask that question is to answer it. You wouldn't, would you? That's how you know who the real threats are and who aren't. We are at a point now where we have to question everything. And that's how we're going to get to the truth. Well, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments on any of the issues we discussed, drop me a line. You can reach me at comments@itnshow.com. That's comments@itnshow.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
If it's on your mind, it's in the news. Subscribe to In the News on both iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. This has been In the News.